You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. As the U.S. military prepares to launch attacks against Iraq, ordinary Iraqis who've survived 12 years of economic sanctions and bombing seem remarkably calm. KPFK's M.T. Karthik recently spoke with Pacifica correspondent Jerry Quickly, who is currently on special assignment in Baghdad covering the war in Iraq. Jerry Quickly spoke about his recent arrival in Baghdad and how Iraqis are living their daily lives under the cusp of war.
Baghdad is a city that moves on with its daily business much as though life is normal, and it's not a city and a country on the cusp of war. In some ways, this is very logical, because if the Iraqi people stopped their lives and hid every time a U.S. president threatened to make war on them, they would get precious little actually accomplished. As a result, life in Baghdad appears fairly normal. Taxis and commercial trucks ferry their passengers and their goods around. Throughout the city, there are children, often in school uniforms, going to and from school. The minarets at the mosques regularly broadcast the calls to prayer throughout the city. And all along the banks of the Tigris, children play in small parks, and young couples walk along the river or sit and have tea together. However, in many ways, this normalcy is in stark contrast to the preparations for war that are taking place all over Baghdad. In many places, there are sandbagged gun emplacements that sit ready and waiting. There's also very heavy security, including extensive gun emplacements at many government sites throughout the city. Yesterday, on a drive through the city, I was stopped at a railroad crossing as a large train rolled through, and the train carried many Iraqi tanks, dozens of them. And in the countryside outside of Baghdad, under the cover of night, you can hear a massive movement of troops and mechanized vehicles, which are large enough to wake everyone and rattle the walls of their houses. Those few Iraqis that I've spoken with in the States, Jordan, and Iraq that do want some kind of regime change do not want it to come about through a U.S.-led war. And they are, and if they do, and damned if they don't. Whereas the vast majority of Iraqis who don't want a regime change are simply damned. Also, over the weekend, on Saturday, March 8th, the Federation of Iraqi Women held a peace march and rally on Haifa Street in celebration of International Women's Day. It was a very, very spirited and somewhat raucous rally that felt more like a celebration than a march. There were many foreigners present as well. Much of the rally was spoken in Arabic, with some English and a bit of French as well. The women of the Federation of Iraqi Women are made up of many ages and occupations, including housewives, engineers, students, office workers, and many others. Also quite stunning were the number of children who accompanied their parents. There was music and dancing by many of the rallygoers, and spirits were extraordinarily high. So while much of Baghdad goes about its business, there do remain strong signs, from the tank-laden trains to the loud peace rallies, that Iraq is quite indeed on the cusp of war.
What can you tell us about availability of reliable information? Is there something of a free press, and do people know what is going on with regard to the jockeying for power that is happening between the French-led bloc and the United States, UK, Spanish bloc to decide what happens next in this situation?
Well, the access to information here is quite a bit different than in the United States. However, people do get the information. It tends to trickle out a bit more slowly, in as much as there is not massively available internet access, although there are many internet cafes throughout the city, and there is a more limited choice of media available through television and on the radio, and that which you do hear tends to not necessarily be the most current. However, the information, as I said, does get out and does get to the folks, the population here in Baghdad, and I think that the sense that folks have is they're less connected with the minutia of exactly what's happening and what either France or Germany is doing, or where, you know, the Al-Samud 2 was found, or they seem less concerned with that, the kind of the gyrations and minutia of what's going on as this process develops, than they are with the general concern that the United States is simply intent on making war. And whenever you speak to any of the Iraqi citizens here in Baghdad, they say, well, you know, we go on with our lives and we hope for the best. But if war comes, there's nothing we can do but fight. And hopefully war will not come, they say, inshallah, in God's will.
Pacifica correspondent Jerry Quickly of KPFK speaking with M.T. Karthik from Baghdad. Well, as the U.S. continues its war preparations, the Pentagon is adding more weapons to its arsenal. The U.S. Marine Corps confirmed that so-called knockout gases, such as tear gas and pepper spray, have been shipped to the Gulf to be used as riot control agents in a possible ground-led attack. This troubles Peace Watch commentators Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen.
The United States is preparing to use toxic gases in Iraq in direct contravention of the Chemical Weapons Convention. In fact, the so-called carminative gases that killed 120 hostages in the Moscow theater siege last year are also to be employed.
Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld asked President Bush specifically to authorize their use. And President Bush, who has spoken often of, quote, smoking out the enemy, is said to have agreed. Internal Pentagon documents also show that the United States is developing a range of gases, and senior U.S. defense sources predict that they will be used in Iraq by the Special Forces units to not only take out command and control bunkers deep underground, but to be used also against the people demonstrating in the street.
Rear Admiral Stephen Baker, Maya, a Navy commander from the last Gulf War, who's now senior advisor to the Center for Defense Information in Washington, confirmed that U.S. Special Forces are going to use gases that, quote, will neutralize people. And he said, if we get the chance to use them, we will. And Rumsfeld declared that he intended to use chemical agents, and this was in a little-noticed comment to the House of Representatives Armed Services Committee on February 5th, the same day that Colin Powell was making a presentation about so-called weapons of mass destruction of Iraq to the United Nations.
Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld has always attacked the, quote, straitjacket of international treaties banning weapons in warfare. He specified, quote, where there are enemy troops, even if there are women and children, we will use them. And General Richard Myers, who's chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, has also spoken of using these gases against the U.S. and European solidarity people in Iraq.
The Texas-based Sunshine Project under the United States Freedom of Information Act disclosed that the U.S. is developing these gases, including benzodiazepines, diazepam, dexmedetomide, and drugs that affect the nervous system that contravene the convention prohibiting the development of chemically-based agents that incapacitate human beings. And a special working group of the Federation of American Scientists concluded that even the mildest of these weapons to incapacitate people will kill at least 9% of them, adding, the chemical incapacitating weapons are as likely as bullets to cause death.
This is
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen.
A former U.S. Air Force veteran who served in the military for 15 years has now joined the fight against a war with Iraq. Veteran Warren Langley is also the former president of the Pacific Stock Exchange, and his opposition to the impending war could prove costly. Langley, who is also credited with raising money to help fund an acclaimed 1998 documentary on Vietnam prisoners of war, is threatening to take actions to shut down San Francisco's financial district should a war begin. When we reached him late last week, he shared his experiences with both the military and financial industries.
I consider myself pretty much from the establishment. I mean, I spent 15 years in the Air Force. I graduated from the Air Force Academy. I spent time in the airline and defense industry and then in the financial service industry. So I don't think my path was the same as a lot of people who came to the same conclusion.
And with your military background, what are the compelling reasons that make you opposed to war with Iraq?
I think you only go to war when it's necessary, and I think you know that better than anybody as a very knowledgeable military person. You need to have a strong defense in the case that you need to go to war, but you need to go to war only under very extreme circumstances and when the need and the threat is such that there's no other alternative. And I just don't think that that's the case here. I think there are lots of alternatives where we can reduce the risk from Saddam Hussein and improve the lot not only of people in Iraq but everywhere, and that we haven't done those alternatives. Somehow the Bush administration has been headed for a war with Iraq at least for the last 18 months, and they won't change their mind no matter what new information comes up.
It really is rare that a man of your military background and your position and your career would part with the government on such a key, a critical issue.
It is rare, and I think that's why I hope my message is compelling to other people who feel the same way, to both speak out and step out. If you come from knowledge, you can maybe make better choices. I think I do come from some knowledge, at least about how the military operates, and I think the military, as they should, will go and do their job, so I don't fault them for anything to do with the war. I believe it's a political decision, and that's what needs to be changed.
People would say, what do you know that nobody else knows that would bring you or prompt you to arrive at the decision that you've made?
Well, I, in a funny way, I think I know what all of us know is what we've read in the papers and what we've seen on television. And I think, drawing from those facts, we're not convinced. There's a huge number of people in this country and in the world who are not convinced that this is the right thing. And I have to say that some of our very strongest allies are not convinced. And if Mr. Bush, Mr. Powell, Mr. Cheney, Mr. Rumsfeld aren't willing to show all of those people what they know and they're still not convinced, then I'm not convinced. I think the case hasn't been made.
Why do you suppose the administration is just so, some have said, hell-bent on having this war?
That's what worries me the most. I mean, usually if you can understand why somebody's doing something, you can appreciate where you differ. And that's what scares me, is I don't understand. All I hear from Mr. Bush and others is just the rhetoric of the threat is too large, the threat is too great, and I just don't see it. But I am concerned when I read some of the things that I've read about long-standing things that Mr. Pearl, Richard Pearl, and some of the other supporters of this policy have said about destabilizing the Middle East, regime change, destabilizing the Middle East, and restructuring the whole thing.
You write that your father was a World War II prisoner of war.
Yes, my dad, actually, I was born a month before he was captured, and I didn't actually meet him until I was about 2.5, 3 years old. He was captured in North Africa before Kasserine Pass,
mm-hmm.
and then was in a prison camp, a British officer's prison camp in southern Germany for a short while until they established an American officer's ground forces camp in Poland. And he spent 2 years in that prison camp, and then when they were moving the American prisoners back toward Germany as the Russians advanced, he and a group of people escaped and went back through the lines and were repatriated, actually in Port Said in Egypt. So I have very much appreciated his perspective on life, having lived through that. And it was really funny. We were in England for Christmas. My wife is English. I was surprised at how strongly opposed to the war my father is. And his statement that was really meaningful to me was, obviously Mr. Bush and Mr. Rumsfeld and the rest of them haven't ever gone to war. They wouldn't even be considering it if they'd been involved in the war directly themselves. And I have to say that seemed quite wise to me.
You still have so many ties to the military. And some people that have chosen to speak out against this war have been labeled as unpatriotic and un-American just simply for expressing their anti-war sentiments. Are you afraid of any reprisals for you or for your family if you take this
stance? Well,
I've
thought about that, and I certainly talked to my wife and my two daughters about it because I didn't want to put them at risk. But all of them have felt this was the right thing to do, and they've been very supportive in encouraging me to do it. And you know, you worry, well, what will your friends think? I mean, I have a lot of friends that live in Colorado Springs around the Air Force Academy, and I suspect when they hear of this, they may not be my friends anymore. And I guess I've concluded that in a democracy, you should be able to speak your mind, and if people really are your friends, they'll respect that. Happen. So,
I read that you advocate Warren Langley shutting down the San Francisco financial district if war is actually declared.
Well, because that's the industry I came from, and because I had the title of president of the Pacific Stock Exchange, I felt like if I advocated something like that, people would listen and say, "Well, why is he doing that?" and dig deeper into it. So, yes, I do that. I think it sends a message. I realize it disrupts people's lives on the day that it happened. I think that's sort of a small price to pay if we can actually convince people to do more to stop this war.
At the same time, there is evidence that the war never really ended, and that the U.S. and Britain and the U.S. and allied forces occupy almost 60% of Iraq in the so-called no-fly zones. If you feel that shutting down the financial district is a viable means of effecting some change, why wait until the war actually starts?
Well, several people, I got a couple of emails from friends, said, you've got to do something sooner. And I almost think that may be true. I think the direct action against the war people are the ones that will make those kind of decisions, and I'll support them and join in. But if they were to choose to do something before the war, I would participate.
Okay. Warren Langley, thank you very much for your time and your perspective. Are there any final thoughts on your part, something I have not asked you about directly?
I guess I would say that if your listeners, if there are people in your audience who have been thinking about doing something, I would really encourage them to do something and look and see. And maybe the best thing they can do is write a letter, and they should do that. Or the best thing they can do is join a march, they can do that. But I think we can all do something more, and I think it's worth taking a risk. So I would encourage people to find out what they can do and do it.
Former U.S. Air Force veteran turned peace patriot, Warren Langley. He also is a former president of the Pacific Stock Exchange. In Houston, Texas, children and their families gathered under sunny skies this past weekend to stand up for peace and justice with Families United Against War. Over a dozen groups sponsored the event, including the Mama's Brigade, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and Mothers for Global Peace. The March for Peace was dedicated to the children of Iraq, who comprise almost half of their country's population. From sister station KPFT in Houston, in collaboration with the Houston's Independent Media Center, we bring you this report.
My name is Janelle. I'm 14, and my sign says peace is our only security. Most people at school, my school doesn't really understand, like, what's going on, and most people are asking us, like, why we're here and if we even know about it and why we're, like, opposing the government and trying to be, like, rebellious. Most people, I really don't understand, like, the situation that we're getting into, so most people at our school don't really understand, and friends that we have don't understand it, really.
If people say that war is coming from September 11th, think how many people were hurt, and then they're just doing the same thing to others. So I think that's just really stupid, and
we shouldn't inflict the same pain that we felt upon other people. And what they did to us was wrong, but that was just like a group of terrorists and like their terroristic leaders. But we shouldn't put innocent lives at stake because of the wrongs of others, because that's what they did on September 11th.
I want my son to live in a peaceful environment, and we stress that at home, and I can't really see how I can stress that at home and not support that in every way.
Ben Gibbs, I am exactly 7 3/4.
Can you tell me what about your picture, please? What does it mean?
Well, it kind of means that the United States wants peace, yet, you know, that important stuff. It's just, I thought of the United Peace Flag. It's exactly the same as the real flag, except instead of 50 stars, which would be practically impossible to do, I put just a peace symbol. Ugh. We shouldn't go to war because, yeah, we can blow them up to bits, but we're trying to free them, not to destroy them.
My name's David Kunchik. I brought my two boys, Parker David and Truman Rourke. I'm out here today to show that the people here don't want war. I also want to teach my kids the importance of community and rallying together. Parker, what are you drawing on your prayer bags?
My name is Carol Denson. I'm with Mothers for Global Peace. And I have this sign that says arms are for hugging with a peace symbol because I think it's a nice sign for my son to have. The values I try to teach my child are to do what's right and not to fight with people, not to bully, not to dominate, not to steal. And I want my government to do the same. And I want to be able to tell him that we're the good guys and be telling the truth.
What do we want?
Peace.
When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
Peace.
When do we want it?
Now.
My name is Tina Sullivan, and I'm here actually to support Iraqi children. There is no such thing as acceptable losses when it comes to children. I'd be devastated at the thought of my family, my neighbors, my friends, my city being bombed. How could I possibly accept that kind of solution or end result for the people of Baghdad and Iraq?
My name is Benjamin Levin. This is Sophia Levin.
Why is it important for you as a dad to be out here?
Oh my goodness, we talk to them all the time about the kids over there. We've researched this extensively, and basically, I've never been politically motivated, and I just am fed up that we've been being lied to, and the consequences that are at stake. For instance, the children, I've got three of them. That's the biggest, one of the biggest factors for me, basically, is the kids.
George W. Bush cheated because he wanted to be president. Whoa, whoa. Not everyone knows this, so I thought I would say it today. That's all.
My name is Pierce Frazier. I don't think there should be any war either. People are dying and being sick. Why is there a war? Why is it here? Why should they do it? What is it for? Is it for defense? Or is it for, like, aggression? Is it for violence? Or is it for solving things?
I don't want war any in this country or in another country.
This piece was produced by Pacifica Station KPFT in Houston. Millions of women around the world and in some 50 cities across the country marked International Women's Day on Saturday with protests and vigils in opposition to the U.S.'s plans to attack Iraq. Here in the nation's capital, tens of thousands marched to the White House and attended a rally organized by the women's group Code Pink. Among the speakers were California Congresswoman Lynn Woolsey, author Barbara Ehrenreich, and Granny D., the 92-year-old grandmother who walked 3,000 miles across the country to call for campaign finance reform.
We meet in disturbing times, but we must not be disturbed. We must be calm and peaceful, for peace cannot come from hearts disturbed and angry. And peace, if it is to come, must come first from our own hearts. Here are some things to give us some calm comfort. France and Germany are together in something at last. Now, man in the White House deserves a Nobel Peace Prize, at least for that, if for nothing else. The man in the White House is the best political organizer we have ever had. He generated the largest protest demonstrations the earth has ever seen last month. He has us organizing on the peace front, the civil liberties front, the environmental front, the domestic budget front. Everywhere people are waking up after a long sleep. It is a dangerous time, but a great time. A great awakening. And we must give credit to the man whose monumental presumption has made this possible. Will our hearts be on a roller coaster of his design? Will he control our happiness and our anger? No! No! We must not give him that. There is only one way off the roller coaster, and that is to focus our lives on November 2nd, 2004. That is the mountaintop we must have in the center of our vision. Here is what we must do. We must, of course, find a good candidate who can represent all of us well, including the moderate middle of American thought, where elections are won. We must not look for the perfect candidate, but for a candidate who believes in the value of life on Earth and who will uphold the Bill of Rights.
Doris Haddock, also known as Granny D, addressing the crowd at Saturday's International Women's Day rally in Washington, D.C., Pulitzer Prize-winning author Alice Walker recited some of her recent poetry inspired by the impending war with Iraq.
This poem is self-explanatory, and I send it out to my country people, my fellow Georgians. I come from a culture that is not, generally speaking, brutal. I come from a culture that is nurturing. I come from a culture that would not automatically think of killing someone just because they look different or they have oil. So this is called Thousands of Feet Below You, and I'm dedicating it to the young men from Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, who are slow talking and sweet moving and who are not at all interested, generally speaking, in killing and harming anyone, and yet who now are a member of the Air Force. Thousands of feet below you, there is a small boy running from your bombs. If he were to show up at your mother's house on a green sea island off the coast of Georgia, he'd be invited in for dinner. Now, driven, you have shattered his bones. He lies steaming in the desert in 50 or 60 or maybe 100 oily, slimy bits. If you survive and return to your island home and your mother's gracious table, where the cup of loving kindness overflows the brim and from which no one in memory was ever turned away, gather yourself, and set a place for him. This is called Not Children. What should be left in the dust? Not children. War is no creative response, no matter the ignorant provocation. No more than taking a hatchet to your stepfather's head is, not to mention your husband's. It is something pathetic, a cowardly servant to base emotions, too embarrassing to be spread out across the destitute globe. The only thing we need absolutely to leave behind, crying, lonely, in the dust.
Alice Walker, Pulitzer Prize-winning author of The Color Purple, speaking Saturday at the International Women's Day rally in Washington, D.C. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Our producer is Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Adil Hamad of KPFA, Goldie James of UN Radio, Angelique Shofar, and Benta Berklin. If you'd like to support this type of programming, we urge you to visit Pacifica.org and make a pledge through our secure online website. Or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. 2009. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.